What happens when we face difficult conversations? These conversations can heal. They can foster forgiveness. They can inspire and change perspective. Lean into these stories and discussions. I think both our guests and our listeners will find value in them. And selfishly, I know I will too. In part one, we met Mia, where she took us through her incredible heart transplant story. She's back for part two, where her story becomes, believe it or not, even more remarkable. Welcome back for part two, Mia. Thanks for taking some time to chat with me today.
Yeah.
I think where we left off last time was it was kind of funny. You said, Malaya's birth went okay. I just was in a coma for a couple of days, but after that, I was okay. And I laugh because I'm like, wow, that sounds pretty significant. But compared to what you've been through, maybe it was just like, oh, just a little coma.
Yeah. I mean, it might have been my scariest coma, though. I guess I just really don't talk about it that much, but that one was probably the worst. So I went into labor early. I had Malaya at 31 weeks due to preeclampsia. I don't really know why it happened. I guess you have a higher cause of having it if you already have high blood pressure. And
I'm not an OB, but that's essentially when your blood pressure gets really, really high, and the only way to get it down sometimes is to go ahead and have the baby.
Yeah. And that's where we were. It happened quickly. Like, I was in the hospital for 2 days, and then they wanted to try to keep her in for at least like a week and a half, 2 weeks, but my pressures were getting out of control. And then I started accumulating like too much fluid. So after they did the C-section and delivered her, she did perfectly fine. She did go to the NICU with just like oxygen, but she never needed to be ventilated or anything. I guess my stats dropped like drastically low, and I had to be like emergency ventilated. Yeah, and I don't remember any of it. Like, I don't remember my C-section. I don't remember seeing Malaya for the first time. I don't remember going in for a C-section. So I think that's why being in this sort of coma was so hard, because I woke up, ventilated, and I just remember like grabbing my stomach and knowing that there was no baby in my stomach. So I didn't know what was going on at all. Felt like I just like woke up, and this was 3 days after she was born. I had no clue where I was or where my baby was. I mean, it felt like a nightmare waking up like that.
Do you remember I guess it would have been maybe the second time, but do you remember when you got to see Malaya again after you were kind of brought out of your coma and extubated?
I had to be on the like step down floor for a day, and I was so anxious to go and see her, but I guess they were really just making sure I was okay before taking me there. But when I seen her, I think I was in shock. I didn't think that like she was my baby, because she was so beautiful and just so, she looked like a tiny little angel. I just burst into tears. Like, I was just bawling because she was so pretty. Honestly, yeah.
Other than being early, right? She was 9 weeks early. She was pretty healthy.
She was healthy. She just really needed to learn how to eat. And she was on oxygen for a little while, but nothing ever serious enough to be like ventilated. She started eating by bottle. And then we were sent home 8 weeks later. She got to like 5 pounds. We went home. She was born at 3 pounds. So she gained some weight and we were able to go home.
So what was it like taking your baby home?
Scary. She was just so small. I didn't know how sick I still was from being in that coma and all the effects that happened to me. I got really sick and ended up in heart failure. I was at Mayo Clinic for another month. I wish I could do like those first few months again, because I was so sick and I just think I was so exhausted that it was rough. It was honestly really hard.
And I mean, given all that you've been through, you don't complain. And so for you to say something is rough, it must have been really tough.
It was really hard. Really, really hard. I remember taking her to like doctor's appointments and like having to give Malaya to the nurse. And I was just so sick and so weak. Yeah, it was rough. And then when I got home, obviously I was doing a lot better, but she was perfect. I mean, she was healthy. She was eating like crazy, meeting milestones, you know, everything was perfect.
And so the first few months of her life, once she had got out of the hospital, kind of continued in that fashion, right? She was a healthy baby. At some point, this began to change.
Yeah.
What was the first thing that you noticed?
Really fast breathing. I know babies breathe obviously like faster than adults, but it was like way too fast. But it was just, you know, she was looked at and they just said that's her breathing pattern, her oxygen looks good, you know, just kind of, it looked normal, nothing alarming, basically.
Did you feel reassured by this or did you still have some concerns?
Yeah, because after they kind of said her breathing was fine, I want to say like a month later, she got more symptoms. Like she wasn't eating. She wouldn't sleep. She was just never comfortable. She's just always crying. Like, you know, there was just something wasn't right. Like, but I didn't, you know, people are like, well, maybe she's teething. Maybe it's gas. Maybe it's this, you know, so I'm trying all these natural things, exercises with her, like seeing if it's something like that. I ended up taking her to be seen through the emergency department. And sorry, this one's a little bit hard to talk about, I guess. So I took her to the emergency room just because she wasn't eating. She was really fussy. They did an x-ray and diagnosed her with bronchiolitis. I guess just like inflamed bronchioles, basically. Didn't send us home with any medication. Said that she should be better like within a week. Call and see her pediatrician, you know, nothing severe. So we went home and the next morning it was like she was literally like worse overnight. The next day she was just, I mean, she was so fussy. And from a baby who loves to eat when your baby just won't eat at all, it's just, I knew something was wrong. So the next morning we took her to a different emergency room. And this emergency room wanted to admit us just because they could hear that she was having a hard time breathing and just kind of wanted to keep an eye on her, make sure there was no fluid on her, just try to get her comfortable. And they looked at that same exact x-ray the previous hospital took, and they noticed that something was enlarged in her chest. They mentioned one thing that's near the heart that could have been inflamed or big. I can't remember what it was, but they said, or it could be her heart. And I just automatically like swept that under the rug. I knew for sure it wasn't her heart. Like, I'm just like, no, I just, you know, I knew it wasn't her heart. If I could have like bet money on that it wasn't her heart, like, it's just so crazy.
Yeah. And I mean, that's probably it would have been a pretty safe bet, you would have thought, right? I mean,
right.
At that point, everyone thought that your condition was related to a virus that
hit
your heart and caused heart failure. We know that that is not something that can be passed down. And it's like, well, what are the odds, right? That this
could
be related to her heart, just knowing everything that you went through, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It just didn't, I knew in my head that I'm like, there's no way it could be your heart. So they wanted to do an echo. So I'm like, okay, yeah, go ahead and do an echo. I'm just expecting it to come back great. And me being like, you know, I feel like I know so much stuff about hearts. The cardiologist came in and I'm like, hey doc, like what was her EF? How did it look? Like, I, you know, like kind of like smiling, like, let me know what it is. You know, I want to compare it. And he was just like, honestly, it's not good at all. She's at, I think he said like 24% ejection fracture. Yeah.
I mean, there's no way I could ever be in your shoes. I can't even imagine what news like that feels like when someone has the perspective that you have.
Yeah, I didn't believe him. I kind of said, like, you're joking. It was really, really hard to take in. He told me that this is real. He showed me dilated cardiomyopathy is what he said. I felt like my world was just, it was just horrible.
Did he know your history?
Yes.
Yeah. There's one thing, you know, some patients have kind of it can be naive to what some of these diagnoses means, and that's not necessarily a bad thing, right?
Right.
But then we have patients who may just know a lot about medicine. Maybe they're in the medical field or they have lived it. And so for you to hear this news meant a whole lot more to you than it would to someone who doesn't have any background or experience.
Exactly.
Because you know what it can come with.
I lived it.
Yeah.
I lived it. And it was the same hospital I was diagnosed at, you know, and it took me a long time to actually get diagnosed. So I feel like the same thing would have happened to Malaya, like if I didn't take her somewhere else, you know. I mean, her case was totally swept under the rug. I mean, they showed me her x-ray. Anyone could have seen that your heart should not be touching both sides of your chest wall. I mean, I'm not an x-ray tech, I'm not a radiologist, but just looking at it and them saying it, you see that there's just, like, how could you miss it?
Yeah, I'm sure that's terribly frustrating. And, you know, young mothers oftentimes just have their concerns dismissed. You know,
yeah.
It's terrible that it happens. And sometimes it comes with pretty significant circumstances. I don't know that that's necessarily the case with Malaya, but it could have been if you weren't vigilant.
Oh yeah.
With her. And as a mother, you have some intuition, right? And thankfully you knew something wasn't right. You didn't know what it was, but you knew something wasn't right.
Right.
And so you've heard that it is the heart, which probably was as surprising to everyone else as it was to you. What next?
I left the room. I went downstairs. I called her dad and told him he left work. And then right after that call, I called my transplant team. I called my transplant team I was hysterical. I was mad. I don't know if I was mad at them, but I just didn't understand how this could happen. Like, I don't think I really knew what to do, but I called them and I'm glad that I did. I talked to my favorite doctor, got on the phone with me over there and just tried to talk as much as he could to me, telling me I was blaming myself. Like, I think most parents would do if a gene like this was passed down, you know, I was just mad at myself, but they told me to get her to Phoenix Children's Hospital and to get her there as soon as I could get her there. And that was the next thing that I did.
And so at this point, it was pretty clear that your initial illness wasn't caused by a virus, as we thought.
Right.
And it was most likely something genetic. I mean, it hadn't been confirmed at that point, but it was pretty clear that was the most likely link between your illness and Malaya's illness. And so you get her over to Phoenix Children, I assume, pretty quickly.
Yeah, it took a couple days. Yeah.
And then what kind of discussions and conversations did you have with the team there?
So within this 3-day span, her function went down to 15%. So she was going into heart failure. I mean, she was in heart failure, but she was declining really quickly. They got her on a new medications to help keep the heart strong. But they knew that they were going to have to start evaluation for transplant. I mean, we didn't have any other options. We waited there's a certain amount of time that you have to be on the drug to see if they make your heart start working. And then I guess you can be listed. But we tried. Milrinone is one of them. I think the other one is like epinephrine or something like that. Tried it, but it didn't do anything.
So one thing that I can't help but wonder is, in your opinion, being a mother who has gone through a heart transplant herself, do you think that helps with knowing that your daughter may need a heart transplant, or do you think that makes it worse?
Honestly, I think it's helped me tremendously. I kind of think that maybe that's why I got sick first or mine. I don't know. I just feel like there's a reason for it. And I'm able to be here for Malaya in so many more ways than most people. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. we have so many similarities. So I just think that's a hard one.
That's tough. I understand.
Yeah. I mean,
you know, a mother and her child already have such a strong bond, but I can only imagine how much stronger it is because of your experiences, that you, very unique experiences that almost no one has, right? And you have had them.
That's
incredible.
Yeah. I mean, I was definitely terrified, like more scared and sad that she had to go through it than it being myself. I mean, she was so tiny, so little.
So you got her on the transplant list. How long was she on the list before you all got a call?
So she was on the list for, I think, like 2 days, and then she declined too much to where she needed to be ventilated. So at that point, her status moved to the highest status because she was ventilated. And then from that point, it was 12 days. So it was a total of 14 days.
That seems really quick.
Yeah, really quick.
I'm sure it felt really long.
It seemed like years. Years. There's so many people in there. I slept there. I didn't leave the hospital. You know, I was staying right there by her, but the lights are always on, you know, she's ventilated. So it was a lot, but it felt like so much longer than 2 weeks.
Yeah. So another thing that just kind of comes to my mind is, you know, I think about your mother and waiting while her daughter is getting transplanted. Right. And now you're a mother. And you are waiting while your daughter is getting a transplant. Did you ever talk to your mom about this?
Oh, yeah.
Was that helpful? I imagine it was, but I'm curious.
She was living in California then and came down, and she basically stayed there with me almost every night with Malaya. I was still recovering from being sick and being in the ICU, just still dealing with a lot of stuff. And I think I was just completely heartbroken. So she helped me so much during the time Malaya was in the hospital. Like, I was able to actually get some sleep. You know, if she would try to soothe Malaya when I couldn't do it, like if I needed to go on a break, but I didn't want to because Malaya's there, she would stay right by her. So she was very, very strong for me. Yeah.
How did the actual transplant go?
It went smoothly. I feel like it was really quick. Like, I think it was 5 hours, which seems fast.
Yeah.
Mine was 12 hours. So her surgeon, he's amazing. He's just awesome. But the heart wasn't functioning as good as they wanted to. So she did come up on ECMO.
So basically, for the non-medical people, ECMO, it just is a machine that oxygenates the blood because the heart's not able to pump it very well and get it oxygenated by the lungs. And so it kind of does the work that the body is unable to do at that point. So there's some irony, or I don't know if we'll call it a coincidence, around the date that she got her transplant.
She was transplanted on my donor's birthday. Yeah. His mom messaged me, said, I don't know if you know, but today's Bobby's, that's my donor's name, Bobby. It's his birthday. This just feels like a sign. I don't know. We were just like all shocked. Like, it gave us like goosebumps. Like,
I have them right now, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the reason why you were able to have a daughter is that heart in your chest.
Right.
That heart's birthday, the donor's birthday, was the same day Malaya got it about that. So you can't make it up. I mean, it's
crazy. Yeah.
It's really crazy. Obviously, she got off of ECMO and the heart started working pretty good at some point.
Yep. She was only on it for a couple, I think like 3 days, which is good, which is exactly how they wanted it to go if she ended up on ECMO, just to get her stable, get the heart working properly and get her off that. So that was kind of their routine or protocol. I don't know what you want to call it.
So my question is, who was in the hospital longer with all of this? I assume you were, but she was in the hospital.
Me,
all as well though.
Yeah, she was 3 months. She was in there for 3 months.
5 months or so?
I think it was about five.
So you got her home, and how was it once you got her home?
It was great. Her heart has been amazing. It's strong. She was growing. She's awesome. She's doing everything she's supposed to be doing, if not more.
How old is she now?
She just turned 4.
That's what is time. That's crazy. She's
yeah.
already.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Just turned 4 last week. So.
Is she doing pretty well health-wise?
She's doing good. She did develop a post-transplant lymphoma. I don't really know how to describe it, but she just finished 6 rounds of chemo, and we're waiting back any day now to get the results and praying that she's in remission. Yeah. But she did amazing through her chemo. I honestly think it made her grow more. It made her hair long. I don't know, she just like reversed the effects of it. Mm. She did awesome. Yeah, but other than that, she's doing great. She's very sassy.
We've talked about passing down a gene for this heart condition, but I also think you probably passed along some resilience and some grit and some fight. You both are just incredibly tough and strong. Your story is just I've been in practice for over 8 years out of residency now, and I've had thousands of patients, and I don't know that I've ever been moved by a patient and their story to the degree I have with you. And you met me when I barely knew anything. I was just like a brand new intern, but I am really thankful that we have been able to stay in touch.
Me too.
You are an inspiration to me.
Thank you.
To many other people that you know. And I just hope that this story, because it is just so exceptional in so many ways, will reach others, and many of whom might be going through similar things. I've always felt a little bit of a connection. Not that I went through anything near what you have gone through. I had a connection because I had heart surgery when I was a baby. I was, you know, a year old, but you know, we've got a scar that looks similar.
Right. Zipper club.
I think that contributed to why I felt somewhat connected to you, but also many other reasons as well. What would you say as we kind of wrap up? Is there anything that you would say to families that might be going through healthcare scares or anything similar to what you went through?
Take it one day at a time, one step at a time. Honestly, I always tell Malaya baby steps. Like, we can do this in the tiniest steps. We just need to keep moving forward. Trust your gut. If you don't feel like something's right, fight for it. Another thing, you know your body more than anybody, more than anyone. So really, if you think something's wrong, just keep fighting. I mean, I was turned away 3-4 different times, and I had 15% of my heart that was working because I looked a certain way. I looked healthy. I was dying. So yeah, just fight for your health and donate life, of course.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, thank you so much. This is incredible. And I really am appreciative that you were willing to share your story with everyone.
Of course. Of course.
Let me know your thoughts about this episode. I'm easy to reach on Twitter at Jabron Pasha, on Instagram at What Medicine Did, and on unlockingimplicitbias.com. Thanks for leaning in with me.